This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and we're originating, as we do every day, from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number, 877-217-5757. 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. In just a bit, Rolf McCollister, who's not happy about the leadership and the operation of BRAC, which, of course, many in our community treasure our parks, believe we've got a reasonably good system, but Rolf says it could be a lot better. We'll find out why. But we start with Lauren Giffen, who's Vice President of Development at the LSU Alumni Association, and she'll be joined in a few minutes by Colin Jeter. You may remember him, tight end for the Tigers, played for both Coach O and for Les Miles. And Lauren came this way first as a student at LSU. She's a 2012 graduate of the LSU Manship School. And you came from Los Angeles, California. Now, how in the heck did you come from Los Angeles with their 70-degree weather, 365 days a year, to this place? What was the catalyst?
Good morning. Well, look, my parents are both LSU Tigers. My family as a whole really are all LSU Tigers. And so when I was growing up in California, I was graduating high school in 2008, you know, and it was a big place. And I knew that I wanted to go somewhere mm-hmm. where I can make connections and a network. And really, I was looking for a big football school, and I wasn't going to USC. So, you know, I brought my roots back down to Louisiana, and, you know, I'm a Tiger ever since.
Well, and I'm sure the opening game was somewhat of a setback for you.
That was interesting for sure.
LSU has won four in a row. The Tigers are underdogs Saturday, albeit slight, to Ole Miss in a big, big SEC game. But this is homecoming week as well, and there is something called the Tiger Nation Challenge. Tell us more about this.
That's right. So the LSU Alumni Association every year puts on a Tiger Nation Challenge, which really is our annual fundraising campaign for the operations of the Alumni Association. And, you know, we talk all the time that the Alumni Association really is impactful across the country. You know, to folks here in Baton Rouge and Louisiana, you know, we're oversaturated with LSU sometimes, right? We see everything, the good, bad, and the ugly that goes on here. But folks that move across the country, say Seattle, it's really important for them to be tied back to LSU. And, you know, you see a flag waving in, you know, Idaho, wherever, it's exciting. And so that is what we do at the LSU Alumni Association, is make sure those folks across the country are tied into each other, right? So the Tigers that are in their region, so that they can network, you know, and then get tied back to the university. So that's the work that the LSU Alumni Association does across the country. And this week is really where we're funding all of that.
Well, I recall when I was in school around 1980, the president of the university, or the chancellor of LSU at that time, was Paul Merle, who is the father-in-law of the state attorney general. But he noted at that time that LSU just had its 100,000th graduate. Now, I suspect it's now probably around 300,000 or so, and spread all over the country. What's your biggest alumni chapter outside of Louisiana?
I'll tell you. So, of course, Houston and Dallas are great chapters for us, but San Diego is actually a really major chapter. Every year they throw the largest crawfish boil in the world. It's literally been in the Guinness Book of World Records. We get 4,000 to 5,000 people coming out there, so it's a really great show for LSU Pride.
Yeah, and it's been that way. Jack Murphy Stadium, right? Is that still where they moved it?
They
to
moved
Petco
it.
Petco Park.
They moved it because of, you know, the Chargers left, but that was a great facility for us. Now it's over on the marina, okay, in front of all the yachts. So it's beautiful. And to your point, it's always 75 degrees and perfect out there.
Yeah,
so
it is, and the weather, you pay a lot for the weather out there.
That's
too.
That's right.
There's no doubt, but LSU graduates, and I'm being one of them, collectively, we don't contribute as much as other alums from other SEC institutions. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, you know, my president, Joe Carvalito, over there, we talk a lot about how Louisianans are really, you know, love to say that they've built it themselves, and we're prideful in what we do on our own. And so, you know, we talk a lot about other SEC schools where, you know, you're graduating from that school and you are getting a job from another alum at that school. And that's the culture we're trying to perpetuate at LSU, right? Tigers helping Tigers. And so, of course, it's about giving back monetarily, but we're also looking for folks to say that they're willing to support, you know, in hiring our Tigers when they come out of school, not just here, but across the country. We have someone in New York that only hires LSU alumni for interns, just to help them get their start in the world. And so that's what we want, you know, to perpetuate through the LSU Alumni Association.
Well, the Alumni Association is a big fundraising arm for the university, and it's connected in a way to the LSU Foundation. And Robin says we have a question about what is the nexus between the foundation and the Alumni Association?
Sure. Great question. So the foundation is our major, gifting arm for LSU. And so when I have conversations with folks about that, really what I say is the foundation is the fundraising arm for the brick and mortar of LSU, right? So they're building a new library, and that is a major part of what the university is. Of course, they help scholarships and professorships, but really the LSU Alumni Association is kind of more difficult because we raise funds for programming across the country, right? So we work together, of course, when we put on events, we have the foundation folks come with us. A rising tide raises all ships. So we work together in talking about the LSU brand and what that can do for us. But, you know, the foundation is our major, major gifting arm. The LSU Alumni Association, we raise money just to operate and put on our programming. And so we work together in partnership mm-hmm. with them.
Does it help to have a championship football team? Does that help? You said a rising tide raises all ships or all boats. Some believe that that's essential.
It most certainly helps. When you look at the brand of the Tigers, not just football, right? Our mm-hmm. women's basketball program, our gym program. It brings people back to the university. And whether that's folks attending games, right, that all helps our LSU economy. And so, yeah, you know, I hate to say that it's all, you know, dependent on football, but it's very important to us for sure.
And you're working hand in glove with this young man in the studio. Biggest guest we've had in the studio in a while. I think Collis here tomorrow will be bigger, but he's not as...
I think Collis has to be
well-toned as you are. He's a lot older, though. He's about to be 72. But to Colin Jeter, who played for Coach O and was recruited by Leslie Edwin Miles. I remember you were a big recruit out of Longview, Texas, right?
Big recruit might be a stretch, but I am out of Longview, Texas. I was found by Steve Insminger, actually, and was more of a by-chance thing. He just happened to be rolling through Longview on his way to recruit the DFW area, and he stopped in and was kind of just BSing with the coaches, I think, and mentioned that he was looking for a tight end, and they were like, hey, well, we got one working out in the weight room right now if you want to go meet him. So I got the opportunity to meet Steve, and next thing you know, I went down to a camp and mm-hmm. Performed well, and next thing you know, the whole process was about a week. Next thing I knew, I was in school on campus and just in the mix. So it was all very – right. Fast moving, but had a blast.
Didn't you commit to Air Force?
Yes, sir. So out of high school, I committed to Air Force Academy and actually attended. I was up there for boot camp in the summer, but my mother had breast cancer at the time. So kind of became a tough family situation. Ended up coming back. A junior college still upheld their scholarship to me. So I played a year there. Then, like I said, I had intended on going back, but when you come back to JUCO, next thing you know, you have Oklahoma and Texas and LSU and people mm-hmm. like that talking to you. It kind of changed things.
Well, it's good to have an ambassador who was on the floor of Tiger Stadium, and that you were under two different coaches.
Yes,
sir.
Two
interesting guys.
Absolutely. That's one thing I noticed when Coach Kelly came in. You know, I went to his first night, his introduction night, and you got up and spoke, and I just remember talking to people. I was like, man, he's like a CEO. This is a little different than what we've had the past couple of coaches. You know, not quite the character.
Yeah,
but
I think both Miles and O needed translators. We should have had Lauren on the side.
Oftentimes, yes.
Yep, they both had unique ways of saying things, that's for sure.
Yeah, but you obviously had a positive experience. You stayed. What compelled you to do that?
Well, it certainly helps when your wife's from Ponchatoula. That keeps you down here in the boot. But no, and on the serious side of things, LSU offered so much to me as a – not only as a student, but as an athlete and everything beyond. I was able to come down here, play, meet a massive network of people with the brand at LSU. Obviously, I met my wife and her family, and that was part of the reason I'm staying. But I honestly reached a point where when I graduated, I played a couple years after, I decided just to come back because I believed in that network down here and the brand that LSU provided. And I think it was all, so far, has worked out well for me.
Well, we're glad you're part of Tiger Town, and it's always good to have people come from other states and come this way. And both of you, one from Texas, one from California. Now, the Tiger Nation Challenge, a listener asked this. So you go to lsualumni.org, right?
That's correct.
That's what you do, and you can go through the process and and become part of the Tiger Nation Challenge. But the overall mission of the Alumni Association, how would you describe that, Lauren?
Tigers helping tigers, right? Tigers connecting tigers. There are schools that we know across the country that, like I said, no matter what, you're going to get helped out by somebody there. And that's what we're perpetuating. So, you know, reach out to your chapters in your different regions. That's a big part of what the LSU Alumni Association does. And that's how we keep folks regionally connected back to us and connected to each other. So getting those networks up and running is really what the Alumni Association is here to do. And that's where our money goes, right? You know, it takes money to travel across the country and put on programming and keeps folks connected back. So that's, you know, that's really what we do every day.
Well, congrats on your job at LSU, and she is a graduate. Lauren Giffen is of the LSU Manship School. And also an LSU grad is Colin Jeter, who's the Director of Development at the Alumni Association. So hopefully we'll have you back again soon and very soon.
Absolutely.
And Ralph McCollister is next. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and in studio is Ralph McCollister, who has been a man about town all his life. Legendary dad. He was quite a lawyer, and I used to see him at the Spectrum. He was working out right to the very end, and a military guy too. So a lot of respect for your dad, and I'm sure he is somewhere cheering you on. But last time you were on this program, you had just decided to call it a day as the publisher of the Business Report. That was your baby, and you're still in the publication. Yeah. That's why we're talking with him. But how's life going since?
It's going good. My dad was my hero, and in fact, you know, he was an attorney. My brother's an attorney as well as my brother-in-law, but he was also a publisher. He started the North Baton Rouge Journal when he was 19. And it started as a weekly and became a six-day daily. And the Advocate was in South Baton Rouge. And then he sold the business and went to law school. And, of course, in the meantime, went to two wars and got two Bronze Stars, a Silver Star. So he was something special. So I just always looked up to him, a great role model.
He was indeed. Good family, and you've stayed here, and you've made Baton Rouge your passion, and you still write about matters. And a listener, before we get to the topic at hand, says, why didn't you run for mayor this time? This is Tom on Bluebonnet, and he says you would have had a shot, and you probably would have, the way things have evolved.
Well, you know, I think about that. I've had people ask me that, and I was 45 back then in year 2000. I was young.
You're 69 now. That's a baby in politics, right?
So I just I was raring to go, but that didn't happen. So I put my attention to, you know, a lot of different endeavors, as you know, that I've been involved with in the community, and of course building the publications, which are always deadlines and multiple publications and events, and then digital. And you know, you have so much change now in business that you really got to be constantly evolving. And it's not the way it used to be. And that's one thing I think about BRAC. I just say, you know, look, you got to think different. You got to meet the needs of the current market. You got to look at what's out there. We want to keep our young people. Well, a lot of communities have a lot of things they offer young people. And I was looking at the marker out at the Baton Rouge Beach the other day, and Pat Screen was the mayor when that was done. And, you know, that was in 1988, and chairman of BREC was Collis Temple, 36 years ago, and he's back on the commission. So, you know,
I don't know that he's ever left. Did he ever? I think he's been on the BREC board for the whole 36 years, and we'll talk with him tomorrow. And Collis, I consider him a dear friend, but Collis has a lot of mojo both with BREC and at LSU.
Absolutely.
He's on the LSU board, too.
He's always been involved, and his son's on the Board of Regents. And so, you know, he's been around Baton Rouge and certainly made his mark.
Well, you have written about BREC, and you believe that there's some serious areas of inquiry. And you noted that BREC is, in your view, subpar to other places, even though we have a bigger park system than many cities larger than us. Now, tell us about that. You don't think that's necessarily a good thing?
Yeah, I think that if you go back and look, and I've been around Baton Rouge my whole life, and, you know, Gene Young loved BREC, but Gene never saw a piece of land he didn't like. So anybody that ever called him and said, hey, I want to donate some land, he'd take it. And in fact, you know, at the end of the back of a subdivision, you couldn't sell a couple lots. And so at the end, the developer would say, Gene, I got a couple lots back here. I want to donate. Well, you know, a good donation write-off for them, but too small to have a park, and now land you have to maintain. And now we have 184 by a number I saw on the site. And, you know, it's just small parks. You know, other towns, as I wrote about, Frisco has six. All those parks are 100 to 250. Austin has 27, and they have 10,000 acres in those 27 parks. We only have a little over 5,000 acres in 184 parks. I looked at the site today. Some of them are like 0.5 acres. You know, I mean, they're just, and in fact, I have a picture on my phone I can show you that there's nothing on it. There's not even a sign on it. And it's like, you have to maintain that. And, you know, people said, well, sell some of it. And, you know, I think that's a good idea. But, you know, they've never marketed those pieces of land because then they could take the money and put it back in, much like we're having an issue with schools. Too many schools, too few students. We've got too many parks. Instead of consolidating and having nicer big parks, you know, we have parks everywhere. And I think Breck has $100 million a year. And you think, you could think, I mean, I just went out to the new elite facility, elite training out there on Burbank, all these two full-size artificial turf football fields. It's privately run, and it's going to have all sorts of tenants mm-hmm. and so forth because it's high quality. Look at Traction out on Burbank, another private facility. You know, why can't Breck have, you know, great facilities and fewer of them? I think they would get more use. And, you know, this tax that we're talking about is, you know, $700 million and will be more because of, you know, the new properties coming on and then future assessments. You know, that's just a lot of money, and you'd think that we could have great parks. We have a lot of parks, but we don't have, in my mind, great parks.
Well, the tax is on the ballot November 5th, right, as in 4 weeks from today, and you say vote no. Right. Why vote no?
Well, I think the idea is that, you know, these are all the commissioners on that are unelected. They're appointed by the council, six of them, and people have no say in who's on the Breck Commission. They really have no clout as taxpayers, but they pay the tax, and they pay, as I mentioned, you know, I think Breck will collect $85 million. And so really the only voice you have and only say you have in Breck's operation is on election day. And in this case, I think the idea, they haven't been good stewards. They haven't raised the bar in excellence. And they claim gold medal, but I've investigated that, and I call it fool's gold. And so the idea is, I think you send a message to Breck, we're not going to tolerate. You've got to sell some of these properties. You got to consolidate. You got to raise the standard. And I think that if people really look closely at it, I think they'll see, you know, there's a better way of doing it, and we've got to hold Breck and Corey mm-hmm. accountable.
Another listener asking to be anonymous asks about your call for big changes at City Park. It's a lady. She says, is that the real reason why you're on Corey Wilson's 1 yard line right now?
I figured that'd come up, but you know, Jim, if you go look back, I've been on that for 20 years. And the reason it came up initially was the library was looking for a Southdown library. They were looking for location. And I thought, hey, look at this beautiful piece of land right on the lakes, rolling hills. Can you imagine having a glass library looking out on that site and then having somebody say, hey, look, I'm going to come bring the kids to the library, let them do their homework. I'm going to run the lakes. And hey, there's a coffee shop there. Have a cup of coffee. What a great gathering place. Well, that didn't work out. But then the idea was, what else could be there? And it's always, again, think different. What do other communities have? This is one of the gems. In fact, that land, Jim, is city property. That's not Breck property. That was donated to the city, but our plan of government says any land left for recreation is to be managed by Breck. So they manage it. Look at the Knock Knock Museum. They let Knock Knock use that. They didn't give that. That was city property. Knock Knock has hundreds of thousands, literally, visitors to that Knock Knock. It's more popular than anything in that park because it's high quality. If you've ever been there, I've taken my grandkids. It's spectacular. They do a great job, but Breck has nothing to do with it. You know, it's a private entity. And so I just say the idea is, yeah, I'd like to see something on City Park, but also, like I said, there's a lot of parks all over mm-hmm. the parish. And, I mean, I've been to Oakville in my current issue. I have pictures, you can see right there, and potholes, and I've driven through those potholes, and I've stood at that concession stand. I've sat on the stands with no shade at my grandson's baseball, and then I go to Broussard or I go to St. Francis Field. I'm going like, whoa, look at these facilities. How do these little towns have these fine facilities, and we've got that in Baton Rouge? It's just unacceptable.
Jim on I-12, we're sliding you in before the break. Please be brief, Jim. You're on with Rolf. Hi, Jim.
No problem. Good morning. Consolidating parks means that, and I agree with you on little, like, open tracts of land, sell them off, but, you know, little small things. But, you know, neighborhood parks in underserved neighborhoods, I mean, that's exactly what they're supposed to be. That's what Breck should be doing.
All right.
Well, so you think those recreation centers they have with no air condition in those underserved neighborhoods is acceptable? Because that's a whole lot of them, and they have other things that, look, we have, I think, and I put in my thing column, you know, as far as recreation centers, we're the number one in the nation, and hoops and all that, we got a lot of
it. All right, and we're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We're visiting with Rolf McAllister, columnist for the Baton Rouge Business Report, which he founded. Julio Malera is the person who runs the show now, who was a protege and partner of Rolf and is doing fine work himself. He's a good businessman. You know, people like you and me, we weren't trained to do this, running media operations, but Julio was.
Yeah, he was 10 years in New Orleans.
Yeah, he's a good one. He's certainly a force in this town, as are you, and I'm pleased that he's left you with a place at the table, which I think is important in our community. You have a lot of institutional knowledge. And a listener notes that I did not, and I wasn't playing any games, but I did. This is Rachel saying, you didn't mention that Rolf was on the LSU board twice, and you were. You were friends with a couple of governors,
yeah.
And that's the way it works. And God bless you. If a governor wanted me to be on the LSU board, I'd be there.
Yeah.
Like right now.
Yeah.
I'd leave this show to go to a meeting.
Well, I was honored to serve and learned a lot the first time, and was involved the second time. So I appreciate Governor Romer and Governor Jindal allowing me to do that serve because I'm an LSU grad. So it was great.
And on the 4th, as in 4 days ago, it was the birthday of one Charles Elson Romer.
Right.
And I think of him a lot. He was a force of nature. And Louisiana, we beat ourselves up, but and our governors have been controversial at times, and we've gone from Democrat to Republican and so on for about 7 straight cycles. But I'd say on the whole, we've had some of the smartest governors in America, and from the right and the left.
Yeah, right.
And Romer was right there with any of them.
Well, my experience was Buddy and Bobby, and they are two of the smartest, both of them. You know, Bobby Rhodes Scholar, Buddy Harvard MBA, you know, went to Harvard at 16, so I mean, it was amazing, and I miss him.
Edwin was a smart guy.
Yeah,
and
he was.
And the other Edwards was a smart guy, a smart guy.
Yeah.
And, of course, I knew John J. McKithen, former LSU board member, and I loved him.
I served with him briefly before his son-in-law came in. And took
Bob Meredith, yeah.
And even Walker Percy. Buddy named him briefly. He only came to a couple meetings.
Well, and that was because he was sat next to John McKithen, who told him, I could hear him. He's saying, a secret cabal is running this university. And that's what the perception is that there's us insider stuff in every entity. Is that fair?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I think the idea is, for instance, perception's reality for a lot of folks, and some of that feeds on itself. The history's there, and so people say, oh, well, that's Louisiana, you know. And so I think some of it's not, it's folklore, but, people tend to be negative, a lot of people now. You know, that's where, like, for instance, with Breck, you know, you start to worry about operations, and somebody starts calling me after this column and says, well, you know, the new CFO is Corey's first cousin, you know, and people start, and he may be extremely qualified. I don't know. And then someone
Is there a nepotism?
They say the law was checked and everything was fine. And the same way as somebody calls me and says, Corey's on a law firm website for mediation. And I look it up and there he is listed as an attorney available for mediation when he's CEO making over $200,000 at Breck, and you wonder, well, when does he have time to do that? And so those kind of things pop up, and I don't have the answer. You can ask Collis tomorrow, you know, if they're aware, you know, but these are the kind of things that, you know, this is a serious, I believe parks are important, you know. Now, I don't think we need 184 because other communities seldom have those kind of numbers. And so the question is the operations. You know, the legislative auditor is the one who informed me we were 25 days away from being 3 years late. I didn't come up with that. And then you start looking at how the assets are frozen at the treasurer's office because you're 1 year late. So the feds and the state won't give you any more money after you're 1 year late on your audit. And we were 3 years late. And so, you know, those kind of things, it's like if I'm filing for a new loan at the bank or I'm renewing a loan or a mortgage, and they say, I need your recent current financial statement, Jim, you know, or your current tax return. Well, I don't have it. Well, can you give me last year's? I don't have it. Can you give me 2 years ago? I don't have it. My goodness, you can't give me 3 years tax returns or you can't give me an updated financial. You're not getting the loan. Mm-hmm. And they're asking the taxpayers to say, hey, would you give us $700 mm-hmm. million? Now, I say, you know, look, when you get your business in order, we'll talk. But that seems reasonable to me.
All right. We're going to the phones, and the number again, if you'd like to get in, there are a couple lines open, 877-217-5757. But a listener asked about a public records request that you filed. You wrote about that. What happened in that realm?
Well, I did. I asked for a public records on, I'd heard, you know, after my column came out, there was conversation. So I said, let me have all the texts and emails. And I put in a public records request. Well, I get an answer back that says, there are none. Well, you know, I happen to have copies of them, Jim. So then I said, I have copies of those texts. You know, oh, okay, well, let us look again. And suddenly they came back and said, oh, we jumped the gun and responded too quickly. We found them. Well, by that time, I'd already filed my complaint on the public records. In addition, when you have 9 members of the commission on a text email, that's a meeting. You can't have a quorum. You can't. And so now the Attorney General is investigating whether or not this discussion over my column was official. Was there any official business or whatever? And why they were all meeting on text. And so now the Attorney General is investigating them. So it's the way they're doing business, Jim. You know, these are tax dollars. I mean, $100 million a year, you know, with a board that nobody elects. We need to hold them accountable.
877-217-5757. John in South Baton Rouge. John, you're on Talk Louisiana with Ralph McCollister. Hi, John.
Hey, Ralph. Thank you for really picking up this cause. Have you personally ever been to Ruston and seen the recreation park they have?
I haven't.
It is beyond anything I have seen, and it's in, dare I say, Ruston. I'm not talking St. Francis, bro. I'm talking Ruston. This thing is world class.
All right. Well, I think Ralph has stated that he believes other places have better mousetraps, but Ruston is the home of Louisiana Tech. There are some people of literacy and passion and culture who are in Ruston, Louisiana, so I wouldn't be surprised that they have a great, and it's the most beautiful city in Louisiana, I think.
Well, like I said, if you go to Traction out on Burbank, you'll see a fantastic facility. It's a private one. You go to this Elite, you're going to see. And so the idea is I think we could have that, but you have to have fewer, just like on schools. We have a school that's 30% occupied. We have a third of our EBR schools that are under 50%. Well, you got to maintain the whole school. You got to air condition the whole school. You got to, you know, so this I just consolidate and have nicer schools and more money for teacher pay. But you got to do business different, and everybody is. I mean, you know, in the print publication, if you're not revising your operations and your models and your digital and so forth, I mean, you won't make it. And I think the idea is we just got to break the mold and Breck. And I just don't know if the people on the Breck Commission think different.
877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Rolf McCollister, Elizabeth, Robert, West Baton Rouge. Westminster.
No,
Elizabeth, go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Elizabeth. Hey, Rolf, this is Little Miss Positive. And as you know, tax busters opposed the original big Breck tax, mm-hmm. and we were considered outcasts by the community. But Big Fred was correct. It didn't need to pass then, and it doesn't need to pass now. But my question is, politicians continue to meet, talk, tax, and spend our money. So it's really tough to get the message out. So what ways do you suggest, you and Jim suggest, to get the message out?
All right.
Well, like I said, that's tough. I made in my column, Breck is going to spend $570,000 between July 1st and November 5th election day. That's our money to convince us to pass this tax. I don't have that kind of money to do it. I've actually looked at spending my own money to help spread this information outside my column, which I've shared online and so forth. But my wife said, what are you doing? I mean, why are you funding? My daughter said, Dad, why are you doing this? You're retired. Go to the beach. Enjoy yourself. But this is home. And I just see this, which I consider, the wrong way of direction, the wrong direction. And I just say, I got to make sure people are aware. Jim, and I hope that 50% of people show up to vote. But, you hope that those that show up to vote are informed of what they're voting. Because, the message is, can you be against parks, Rolf? I mean, we need parks. I agree we need parks. We need great parks. And so this is the difference, is it's not, I'm not against parks. I think it's wonderful. We ought to have those for kids. But I got moms.
What's the average person pay?
They use the number, like on this bill, they say, if you have a $200,000 home, you can pay $118. Now, if you go to $400,000 with these days and prices of houses, I'm not sure what the number is.
But then you get multiple 236. If you're at 800, you're at 472, and so on down.
It's just it's that and the principle of how are the dollars being spent. And then, like I said, the Council on Aging has 17 senior centers out there that they're building and pool tables and facilities. Well, look, if they've got facilities, why do we have so many other Breck facilities? I mean, let's consolidate, partner on this, think different. And be able to get the best thing for seniors and the best things for kids. I mean, I got moms with babies who want to stroll to City Park, but there's nothing for them, so they say I pack them up and take them to Independence Park. Well, that's just ridiculous.
All right, Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. McCollister, we probably never voted for the same people, but you've convinced me on this. I'm with you. I'm voting no. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's what I've had people stop me and they said, man, I had no idea. I mean, I just thought we got to have our parks. We've got to support the parks. But I had no idea what they were spending. And this idea of this gold medal. I mean, I talked to two of the national judges and I said, were you aware in 2022 that our accreditation had been lost on our zoo? What? I said, they didn't put that in the nomination. Were you aware that our audits, were years behind? You think they put I said, did they send any pictures? They go, well, no. They send a video if they make the final four. And I said, I've got
all
pictures.
Right, and we'll get equal time from Collis Temple tomorrow, but we'll spend a few more minutes with Rolf, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. We're in our lightning round with Rolf McCollister. Got lots of emails, but if you'd like to get in on the wire on the air, we certainly like phone calls, 877-217-5757. Bill Huey writes, as a former two-time member of the LSU Board of Supervisors, what does Rolf think about the secretive way the proposed LSU Arena project is being handled?
Well, I think that there's good intention there. I know they've been the talk of the PMAC and so forth, but I would agree that there needs to be a lot more sunshine, as Buddy Romer used to say, to tell us, who's involved, how that's going to be handled. The more I hear about it, it's not just an arena, and now it's going to be housing, it's going to be retail. Well, we don't need to create another downtown at LSU, in my opinion. We're right now, Plan Baton Rouge 3 is focused on downtown and the riverfront. I've been living here all my life. We've talked about the riverfront, and we've never done a damn thing. And, here it is. How many cities have a riverfront? They go to Greenville and they come back. Man, did you see their riverfront?
Yeah, I know.
Why take a canvas strip if you're not going to come back and do something? So I'm focused on Butch Spiridon said, if you don't have a downtown, you don't have a city. And he's done an incredible job in Nashville. We used to have Butch and lost him for 30 years up there. And I went there recently, and, man, it's booming. So I think the idea is there should be more, a lot more brought to the table, and I'm sure it will in time. But I'm thinking – we got a lot of choices to make and priorities.
Well, that's the Raising Cane's River Center that will be affected if this new arena is built. And Holly in the Garden District notes. And by the way, I just got my copy, and because of Holly, I turned to see, and there he is, the 107th richest man in America, and one of the youngest on the list, 52-year-old Todd Graves, $9.5
billion.
$9.5 billion.
What a great story. Huh?
That's amazing. He's richer than Gail Benson.
And you know, he's a co-chair of Plan Baton Rouge III, along with Mike Wampold, along with Marty Enquist, along with Eric Dexter and Helena, the four, five co-chairs. And so he's, you know, a key one there that could really help. I mean, he loves Baton Rouge. His office is in the IBM building.
Well, he's killing it with his chicken fingers.
God bless him.
And it opened right there at the gates of LSU. Yeah. The original location is still there. But $9.5 billion. He is the 107th richest man in America, and he's 52 years old. Not bad. Now, Gail Benson is in here as well. She's the only other Louisianian in the Fortune 400.
Bill has the liquor business in New Orleans, Gold Ring.
Is he in?
He's second in Louisiana. Yeah, he's in there. He's between Todd and
is he really?
Yeah. Bill Gold Ring. Okay. I can't remember what number, but he's in there between Todd, and then she's the third.
And he's a guy who's been involved in politics through the years. There's money in chicken fingers and liquor. Can you imagine that? And in football, almost every NFL franchise owner. And by the way, also in this list is one Edward DeBartolo, Jr., disgraced, testified against Edwin Edwards to avoid going to jail, and he's one of the 400 richest men in America, men or women. This is a great country, isn't it? We believe in redemption, don't we? But
I remember back when I first started, we had the Business Awards when we just kicked it off in 84. Steve Forbes was our first speaker at the Business Awards.
And a listener says, who's the richest? It's Elon Musk, $244 billion. That's almost a third of $1 trillion from one man.
But a great country.
It is a great country.
He's a smart guy.
And that's what I'm saying. We beat ourselves up as a country, too, and we got a lot of problems. We got crime and we've got poverty, but there is no country that spurs ingenuity, innovation, and genius like the United States of America. And we've got two universities in our community. We're a part of that.
And that's what's amazing is that, you know, you think like, well, who's going to top that guy? You know, the Bill Gates. And it's like, oh my goodness, here comes Leon, here comes Zuckerberg. It's like now they're into, you know, but how are they going to do it with technology, with, you know, SpaceX, with an electric car? And you're going like, wow, now who can top them? But watch out, Jim. Somebody's coming.
Randy and Zachary. Randy, quickly, you're on with Rolf McAllister.
My question to you, Rolf, is there anything good about Breck that you could say? Because I'm listening to your conversation and everything that you're putting forth seems to be negative.
Well, I don't like that. I've always been an optimist, and you know, I will say this: there are some very, you know, good parks out there that people can point at and say, look, you know, Highland Park, people love Highland Park, you know, and there's others, you know, that people say they're trying to do something new out there with the Innovation Center and Howell Park, you know, not as a golf course, as some other utility. And so there's some, you know, tennis centers, and there's the soccer fields. Now, those soccer fields out there are run by the Baton Rouge Soccer Association. They're not actually run by Breck. They let them manage those. So there's definitely some things out there. They built some paths. Have you seen going through Mall of Louisiana? You know, they've done some things there. So there's definitely things that Breck has done, you know, but there's also been, like I said, other opportunities where I've had people call me who want to do public-private partnerships and go in and put a artificial turf in places in Baton Rouge and pay half the cost. And Breck can't seem to make that happen and make that that deal, you know what I mean? And so I just think that the idea is there needs to be some visionary leadership. There needs to be some change. And I think it could be so much better because, I mean, they have land everywhere. They have lots and lots and lots of land. But, you know, I think they're doing things the way they've always been done before. And that's been, to me, a mantra that's held Baton Rouge back. We can't do things the same way we've done them before.
Thank you, Ralph McCollister, and let's do this again soon, and I'm sure Collis Temple will be at the top of his game tomorrow.
Tell him I'll be listening.
Let's hope he shows.
I'll be listening.
Hope he shows.
I'll be calling in and fact-checking him, so okay. Tell him to be careful.
If you want, we'll take your call. But in our waning moments this hour, we have Chris Champagne, and I got this book the other day, and it is an amazing book, Secret Louisiana, An Unusual Guide, The Smallest Church in the World, The Grave of Two Dogs Who Got Married, a tree, where old shoes promise to unburden your soul, the only example of Congo-style architecture built by African-Americans. It's all in this book. It's all over Louisiana, and we'll bring Chris back, if he'll do it, to talk about some of the things in the state that are showcased in this book. Well, go ahead, Ralph.
I say I give a shout out to our man Todd Graves, because they said what's good is that he does the dog parks.
Yep,
Raising Cane's dog park.
There you go, and that's a breck facility, isn't it?
Yeah, he's done that. He's always given back and put up the money. So you know.
Well, that's one of those treasures, and God bless Todd Graves. Chris, this is going to be an abbreviated discussion with you, but you got some places on campus, both at Southern and LSU, that I'd like to accent. And as you know, you can go see a big tiger right there in the quadrangle at LSU. Tell us where.
Yes, sir. Well, in the you talk about Mike the Tiger?
Yeah, I'm talking about the display.
Right. You can go to the see the original Mike the Tiger. It's right. I'm trying to think of the hall that's by Allen Hall. It's near Allen Hall, but there's a science museum at LSU. It's free to the public, and the original Mike the Tiger is a taxidermist, and he's in there, and you can see him. I don't think a lot of people might not know about that.
And he lived to be 20 years old, and he had a habitat that was like a closet, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't quite as big as it is now. It's like somebody as old as me. I remember how the zoos used to be back in the old days. That's correct.
The original Mike the Tiger is at 119 Foster Hall. And
That's where it is.
He died Mike First, 1956, age 20. And Mike First was in better shape than the current Mike, who is pampered, as we know. But you also go to Southern, the Indian Mounds, and we've talked about them. They may be the oldest structures in the Western Hemisphere. But what about Southern University and its rich history?
Well, at Southern, they have an African-American museum. I'm sure a lot of people don't know about it. Again, it's free to the public. And it's also they also have one in Shreveport and at UNO, But the African Museum at Southern is really great. You can go in there and you can see. When I was in the undergraduate, I remember my wife to be and I. Our favorite art was African art, and you can go to that museum at Southern, and you can see the African art there, and there's also some contemporary African American art there as well. And then they have the Red Stick, which is a monument to where Baton Rouge was founded right there. You can see the bluff at Southern. If you've never been to Southern, it's right on the river, and it has a nice view of the river there. And it was done by a professor who was an art professor at Southern.
And there's some great sculpture, the Oliver Pollock statue downtown at North Boulevard, the Sing the River sculpture at Florida and North River Road, great items of art that people may not have seen or appreciate or have walked right by and not realized they're in the presence of greatness.
Yes, sir. That's true. And that's the purpose of the book. Sometimes you pass by things you don't know the story behind them. I mean, everything has a little bit of a story that's in the book, a background about the history of it and things like that. The Sing the River one is kind of interesting because it's kind of an organic architecture that the river actually makes the noise, the music, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I would like to have you back, Chris, but for those who'd like to peruse a copy, best way?
Well, they're on Amazon, of course, and they should be at all the bookstores.
All right, Secret Louisiana, An Unusual Guide. We certainly want to have you back, Chris. Thank you, sir. Stay safe, stay tuned.